Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The podcast with Dan Gardell and Greg Evans.
Hello and welcome back to 1874, the podcast. I'm your host, Dan Bardell, joined by The Athletic's Jacob Tanswell to discuss an awful, awful day at Villa Park. This podcast is in association with NordVPN. You can grab your exclusive deal by going to thevillaview.tv/NordVPN. And if you do that, you'll get a huge discount. Plus, you'll also get 4 months for free. And it's also completely risk-free as well, because Nord offer a 30-day money-back guarantee. And we will hear a little bit more about NordVPN later on in the show. Jacob, good to see you, but I'm going to do everything I can to avoid getting to the game at the start and just put in a little bit of a disclaimer that I'm trying to be good with water and I'm having to use this monstrosity. Look at how nobody drinks. This will be lost on audio listeners, but I cannot believe that anybody drinks this amount of water. This is what you're supposed to drink.
Is this what your personal trainer told you to do now?
Yeah, but my bottle's bigger than me. Like, I don't know how anyone times it with how much you drank. To be fair, I've done well so far because I'm past where I'm supposed to be. But honestly, that's a ridiculous size water bottle. I'm going to struggle to drink that through the podcast. I suppose we better talk about the game. I'm upset by the game. I'm realistic about it. Look, there's been some absolutely terrible takes on social media, probably some terrible takes from me on social media as well, in fairness. It was a really bad day at the office. It doesn't define Aston Villa's season. It doesn't define Aston Villa as a club and the job Unai Emery's done and what these players have done. We feel like we're down to the bare bones and struggling a little bit at the moment, maybe running on empty to an extent. But if you're going to have a bad day, which Villa undoubtedly did, it's probably best not to have that bad day against a team that's right behind you on your coattails. And unfortunately, that's what Aston Villa Football Club did.
Yeah, they did. I think you remember, obviously, Villa haven't lost back-to-back league games all season. So, you know, you'd rather hope this is just another blip and they'll bounce back like they have all season, you know, next week, next Sunday after, obviously, the Ajax game. But it just felt really disappointing from my perspective, really, because it was such a big opportunity, big game. You know, John McGinn in Amsterdam speaking after the game on Thursday was rallying the troops, saying, listen, this is one of the biggest games in recent memory. I'm going to go around the next couple of days to all the players and remind them if they need reminding that this is a huge game. Essentially, from the first 10 minutes, I spoke to a few people near me. I was just thinking, I really don't know what this is. And I just had a real bad feeling because it didn't look like a Villa team at home. They weren't going for it. They weren't, you know, aggressive. They weren't making these quick starts. The fullbacks overlapping, bombing forward. It just felt like quite a submissive, you know, away performance in a way, just trying to feel your way into the game. I just thought, against a Spurs team that will obviously know the challenges that Villa Park brings, they just had such an easy way into the game. And I know it's 0-0. I know Emery said that relatively did okay in the first half. But conceding one goal will completely undermine your game plan. Like, completely, it will change everything. And, you know, as soon as Maddison scored that first one, then the balance tipped way beyond just one goal margin. It was disappointing, and it did look like a Villa team.
It's really strange, wasn't it? Because you think of all the big games there's been over the last 12 months, particularly at Villa Park. It's always been about tempo, control, fast pace, dominating. You know, some of the games Villa have attacked the whole 10 first and really played on the front foot. But from the get-go, really, that wasn't what Aston Villa did yet yesterday. It was very, very, very passive. Submissive is a decent word to describe it, actually. The press was felt just like it just wasn't there at all. It felt like a low block. Also, bizarre that he decided to change systems yesterday. Unai Emery has been a creature of habit in terms of the way Villa line up off the ball has always been 4-4-2. That has been every single game under his watch, 4-4-2. So Emery has not changed anything. He obviously makes changes on the ball with subtle tactics, the way Villa line up changes and the way they press, changes the way they distribute from the back, things like that. But the fundamental system changed yesterday. And to be honest, the way Spurs almost pinned us back, although I feel we allowed it, it was a flat back five. You know, it wasn't like the wing backs were pushing up high. That was a flat back five that was inviting Tottenham onto them. Can you? I know we've lost personnel recently, but can you think of a reason why you would change formation and go away from what he's done in every single Villa game he's managed previously?
That was my argument to Emery after the game. I said, "Why did you change your back four?" And he said, "We've done it other times this season, but." To me, from what I've seen, it didn't look like from the get-go, you know, from kickoff lined up. Usually, Matty Cash, if he's playing with Konsa, he's just ahead of him. He's, you know, slightly ahead of him. Where this time, as you said, it was a flat back five. It's a 5-3-2, essentially, out of possession.
Yeah,
because, you know, Villa do go into a back five, back six at times. You sort of get his Ajax when the other team has had the ball for more than five passes. They go comfortable, and that's fine. They go into a mid-block. It's a back five, back six. The wingers track the opposition wing-backs or full-backs. And that's absolutely fine. They do that, and they do it to quite good success. But this, initially from the get-go, was a flat back five. And that comes around to the thinking of being submissive, because Emery is so worried about Destiny Adogi, Pedro Porro, going into these inverted positions, operating in midfield. Because if you remember the first game at the Tottenham Stadium, Matty Cash got hooked at half-time because him and Konsa were struggling desperately with Adogi, with Son, with the overloads down that left side because the balance wasn't right and Cash was not sure whether to track Adogi into central positions. So he obviously got taken off at half-time. Leon Bailey, Tillemans came on and the game changed, the momentum changed. So I thought it was surprising anyway that Cash and Konsa played. But to probably navigate what happened in that first half at Spurs, he went into a flat-back five, made sure that it's 1v1 out wide, you know, Kulusevski, one side against Luka Dean, for example, and then just try and crowd the midfield, because Tottenham, the only way they build up is through central areas. And he thought, if we can just have a three centre midfielders, Bailey and Watkins were very close to each other centrally. Normally Bailey's a little bit wider, isn't he? Where he was essentially playing as a striker to try and block the passes into midfield. But they didn't really press at all. So Tottenham could just keep the ball, recycle it, and then, you know, build their way into the game. So it was a flat back five. I think the only time I can remember briefly was when Anfield away. I think when Who was it that got injured? Was it Diego Carlos that was injured early on? And then they went into like a flat back five in that first half. But it felt like this was even more defensive and it wasn't in keeping with what we've seen from Villa.
It's strange to do that at home. Look, Emery will have his reasons. And
yeah.
This is the first time I would say I've ever thought he got that set up wrong. That's the only time I've ever thought, yes, we've lost games. We've had games where we haven't played well. But yesterday when walking away from Villa Park was the first time I looked at the manager and thought, I think if he had his time again, if he could redo that game, I don't think he'd do the same thing. Because even the midfield was almost like a flat three.
Yeah.
The two strikers felt miles away from the rest of the team. You're saying about Bailey playing up alongside Watkins. That's not where he's played good football for Villa. His best football all season has been high, wide right. So he didn't really have the license to go out there because that was Cash's area, although Cash couldn't really get up the pitch. So the whole setup just didn't work from minute one. I don't know whether you noticed this. I just felt as well that neither Watkins or Bailey seemed to be able to run at full tilt. I felt like they both took knocks early on in the game and they never really recovered from that. Watkins went down a couple of times in that first half. And just when I was watching him, there was a couple of times he kind of half got through and then checked back or didn't shoot or shot too early. I felt like that something happened to Watkins early on in the game in terms of an injury. Did you get that vibe? Did Emery say anything about that afterwards?
Yeah, he wasn't injured as such, but it was when he was for on goal and he was offside and he tried to pass to Leon Bailey and it got intercepted. The official's flag went up, and that was normally he would just take a touch and shoot like he did against Luton. I think it was weird because, yeah, as you said, if you look at the average position map from the first half, Bailey and Watkins were so far off the rest of the team, so isolated. And Tielemans has been playing in this left-sided 10. He was essentially just a centre midfielder in a flat three, like you say. And they had issues trying to progress the ball at the back. They didn't have much of the ball in the first half, but the warning sign was there. I don't know if you remember that, but I think it was half-hour mark when Conte got the ball. He looked up right in his own near his own byline. And he couldn't clear it, and no one was there. So he eventually won a throwing right by the corner flag. And he looked around, and it's like, I've got no passing options. And that's what happens when you play a back five, because you've got one more player alongside the defence and one less player in advanced areas. So you've got fewer passing lanes. So that's an issue. But regarding Bailey and Watkins in terms of how they ran, firstly, the service into them was pretty hit and hope. There wasn't many passes. You know, Bailey's probably at his best when he gets to his feet and he can dribble, where there's a few times where Cash and Conte would just smash the ball down the byline and say, go and get in a foot race with Mickey van der Ven, who's like this paranormal, you know, athlete, isn't he? Like, I said during the game, I was like, I can understand this tactic if you're playing Maguire and Lindelof, who aren't very good at managing space, but you're playing like two of the most mobile, aggressive centre-backs in the league who are probably, defending these large areas. So I just say, yeah, the service wasn't into them. It was a disconnect overall, and yeah, Bailey and Watkins suffered as a result.
Yeah, never made anything tangible happen in that first half either. A way around it, if you wanted to play that back five, and look, I am in no position to be giving Unai Emery tactical advice at all, but when I saw the players run out at the start, they kind of go to their area where you think they might be, and I saw Conte kind of run to the centre and Cash to right back, and thought, oh, maybe Torres is going to play in midfield. But if he's going to play that back five, if you had Torres in the middle stepping into the midfield, I feel like the whole thing would have been less fragmented if he'd have done that. As a not kind of an old fashioned sweeper, so you've got the two centre backs either side of him, but Torres can come out, bring the ball out, step into the midfield, and then that, I feel like that would have pushed the midfielders higher up as well and got them closer. I think that with the wing-backs, maybe they probably wouldn't have been able to push up defence, but do you know what I'm saying? McGinn, Tielemans, Luiz, I think they would have been able to get higher up the pitch and get closer to the strikers, because that's when I feel Villa are at the best. When Torres is on the ball, I think everyone else can push higher. So if he'd have kind of played that role, I think that would have made more sense than what we did. I'm not having to go at Longley, but he's playing in the middle of that back three, and he can't really do the same things.
No, he tried it once, didn't he, Pau Torres, in that first half, where I think he gave it to, I'm not sure it was Luca Dean or McGinn, and he then tracked his run and had a little 1-2, and he tried to do a diagonal to Bailey the other side. He didn't pay off, but that's probably the only time where Villa actually tried to play through Tottenham, and did it fairly well. It's always awkward from goal kicks, your own goal kicks, when you have a back three, because normally you have two centre-backs either side of the goalkeeper, but you've got another one. Yeah. You're like, where's Longley standing? And he's almost just standing in a position where, just don't get the ball near me. I don't really want it. And he's basically blocking the passing lane for Luiz or John McGinn. Mm. So if it did feel weird, I thought, yeah, even though when we play Cash and Conza, usually Cash for goal kicks goes miles up the pitch, halfway line, right, high and wide. But this time he was deep as well. It just felt like there's so many players deep. How on earth are you supposed to progress the ball when everyone's alongside you?
Yeah, Cash didn't have his slippers on in the first half as well. He fell over about three times in the first 10 minutes, which is when the ball came near him, which of course the Tottenham fans absolutely lapped up. So it was just disjointed, fragmented. I don't think there's too much we can talk about from that first half. Really, I was quite happy to go in 0-0, and I kind of thought, well, we've kept it at 0-0. We've not had a good first half. He's going to get them in at half time, and we're going to reevaluate things, and he'll change a few things around, maybe make a substitution. We'll come out second half attacking the halt end, and we'll go for it, and it will be the type of game that I thought it was going to be. But again, I suppose we did start the second half okay. Then that all gets undone when you concede a goal so early in the second half, and I feel that's been a pattern recently. As well, I could be remembering wrong, but I feel like early goals in the second half keep happening. And also, we'll talk about the second goal when we come to it, but also, you said the first goal, don't concede another one within the first 5-10 minutes of conceding that goal, and we've done that as well. So let's look at that first goal. Let's break down where it went wrong for Villa.
Yeah, so in that first half, the warning signs were there in terms of Villa were obviously comfortable sat in that 5-3-2 or whatever it was, and they were very struck.
We were not comfortable. I wasn't comfortable.
Well, they felt comfortable in terms of that. They didn't obviously get play through as much. It wasn't many chances for either side. But the issue when you're sat in that block is whether one of the Tottenham midfielders runs off the back of you. And Pape Sarr threatened to do that in the first half, and then he did it obviously in the build-up for the Madison's goal. He ran off the back, got onto this channel, didn't he? I don't know where Luca Dean and Pau Torres were in terms of recovering on that side. And then it was a great cross, to be fair to him. Really good cross. It's not the type of goal that Maddison would score, really.
No, it's a good goal.
You know, Maddison wouldn't really score that type of goal. It's more of a number nine finish. And he's a great goal. But then it comes back to, oh gosh, it's only 1-0. But our game plan has to change quite drastically now, because we can't keep doing this sitting in. We've got to actually go out on and try and attack. And I think the second goal, we'll probably come on to it, is, I think it's because Villa are still in that halfway house where they're thinking, we're 1-0 down, but Unai hasn't told us to change yet. And yeah, I think the reaction was because of that. But it was a good goal overall. It's just from Villa's perspective, they were susceptible to Tottenham's midfield running off the back of them.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yeah, look, he's a good player, Sarr, and he took giant strides, didn't he? Got himself forward and whipped in a lovely cross. And Maddison, as he always seems to at Villa Park, finished it well. It's a good goal, but you go 1-0 down, the game isn't over. Villa went 1-0 down against Manchester United at home a few weeks ago, or whenever it was. The game wasn't over. You've got a way of getting back in, but the way Spurs broke in that midfield, that was all the things we weren't really doing. We've got players that are capable, like John McGinn, of doing that stuff, but we just never found ourselves in the position in the game to do it. So you fear the worst when you're 1-0 down, but then it quickly becomes 2. And it just initially at the game, and obviously you can't say anything back. I thought it was Tielemans' fault. I haven't brung myself to watch the game back or much to deny that, but I have watched the goals and the sending off back. I look at it now and think that was Konsa's fault. He put him in a bad situation, but also it's not learning lessons, because I felt like that could have happened a couple of times in the first half. With that nearly happened 2 or 3 times, in fact, in the first half. So we feel like we don't learn lessons quickly, and then we get picked off again. It's a good finish from Brennan Johnson, but you're 2-0 down, and then it really does feel game over. Actually, I say that, I didn't feel it was game over at that point, but you've given yourselves again a mountain to climb. And another issue here is every game at the moment, there's a minimum of 2 goals being conceded.
Yeah, and I said earlier, in terms of Konsa got the ball on a half-hour mark, and he looked round and didn't have any passing options. This was similar in a way, because he actually took a touch to look like he was going into midfield, but he his usual areas of where he knows that his teammates will be in that usual system wasn't there. So Tielemans would never really ideally be there, would he? He would be a bit further forward in this box midfield, but because they're playing this fat midfield three, he was deeper, and those type of square passes, and it was just untidy. And Tielemans, I would have put the blame on him, really. I think it's more Konsa, and then they obviously got broken. It was a good goal, but it was just indicative of the whole day in terms of Villa in possession being quite stodgy, messy, and then obviously just not in keeping with how they usually play.
Yeah, it's a horrible goal. We've given them the second goal, and effectively at that point you give Tottenham the game. Tottenham deserved it. I'm not going to sit here anyway point in the podcast and say Tottenham did not deserve to win yesterday. They were by far the better team. They deserved to walk away with the 3 points. It is what it is. Villa really were not good yesterday. Emery made three subs off the back. I think I'm remembering that right. He made three subs off the back of going 2-0 down. But I looked at the players that we were bringing on, and they've all been good players at various points in their careers. I mean, they've been good players at various points this season. In fact, in Diaby's case, but I looked at the three he was bringing on. I think if you're going to play that system, I think you probably play Moreno over Luka Dean anyway. But it's easy for me to say that in hindsight. I think he gets you up the pitch more as a wing back. But Diaby's not on good form at the moment. Zaniolo coming on feels like pure desperation at the moment. He's more likely to get booked than he is to score a goal. So we're making those changes, and I'm thinking we're down to, these aren't the substitutions that I think if everyone's fit that Unai Emery would be making, maybe with the exception of Diaby. So you feel like we're struggling, we're down to the bare bones. And then John McGinn goes and gets himself sent off as well. I've watched that sending off back. I don't know whether I've just not seen it at the correct angle, but I look from seeing what I saw on the 3 minute highlights and what I've seen on social media. I didn't think it was a red card. I think it's close, but I think if he's booked, it doesn't get upgraded to a red card because I don't think it's a malicious, horrendous tackle. It's stupid, and he shouldn't have done it. But I don't think it's a red card. I think it's one of those ones in the future when football rules changes and football eventually eats itself. It's probably a sin bin. But as you're less biased than me, I'm wondering what you think.
Do you know, I put a tweet out about 3 minutes beforehand and I just saw the warning sign. It begins September, it's just going a little bit. He was getting a bit more rattled in terms of getting restarts quickly. He was starting to jump at the press. He was trying to work, trying to rev up the team, I think. And when I initially saw,
think he was trying to rev the crowd up. I've got to say,
he did rev the crowd up. So he just made that tackle. They started singing Super John McGinn. What he does, when I looked at it, I thought, all right, that's his way of getting a yellow card and revving the crowd up. And it's worked a treat. Look at the atmosphere. And then all of a sudden, you see the referee put a red card out, and you think, I don't think that's a red on first show. But then looking back, I can understand it because you don't really see that tackle much nowadays. You associate with the Roy Keane, Graeme Souness of just sticking one in on him. I don't think he tried to play the ball. It was just one of those. He took his frustration out and thought, have this. I do think it's a red card because it's I can understand why if it's a yellow, but I have no issues with the referee going to a back pocket. I think it's reckless. I think it's just a wild swipe, really. And obviously in modern football, it's got to be more about control. And although it wasn't high, it was just the force, really, and just how obvious it was. If he did it a little bit more subtly, then I can understand.
Yeah, I feel for him because he's obviously he'll be hurting by what's happened. He'll feel like at 2-0 we may have got back into the game, and he'll probably feel like he's cost the team with his red card. Because as soon as he walks off the pitch, the game really is over.
Yeah,
at that point, there's no way Villa are getting back into it. I genuinely think the atmosphere was pretty flat all day, considering the weather's rubbish. It's Mother's Day, 1 o'clock kickoff. Those circumstances all aren't ideal, but it's a huge game. I didn't feel the atmosphere was like it has been in previous games at Villa Park this season. It did feel really flat to me. We're 2-0 down. People are getting frustrated. John McGinn is going to be getting frustrated. He's probably frustrated, feels a bit caged within the system that we played in that game. He pressed the goalkeeper, didn't he? He made a slide tackle just before. And the game did need something like that to try and liven the crowd up. It needed the crowd to get behind Villa to try and will them back into the game. And I do genuinely just think that was what he was trying to do. It's unbelievable refereeing from James Maddison. Because you do always think, would he have done that if the Spurs players aren't reacting in the way that they were? I find it rich that Romero is there throwing his hands up in the air like he's never done anything wrong in his life. The benches but both erupt. I do feel the aftermath probably swayed the referee as well and pushed it towards being a red card.
Yeah, but I disagree with that. I think he's actually done the right thing because he did a Brandon's red card straight away because he, obviously the initial melee was just straight away, wasn't it? You know, managers, yeah. And that's a really good time to think, right, I'm going to run to the scene. There's a red card. Well, I think he just took a few more seconds, and he's obviously, you probably hear it back when Howard Webb does his lovely talk show every evening where he, you know, I think he probably consulted the obviously fourth official.
I'd like to hear it back, actually.
Fourth official was close by, you know, the obviously the assistant referees as well. And then he did it. So I don't have an issue with that. Whether he wanted to put a yellow or red, I can understand both situations, but I probably would have lent on the side of a red card. I think for me, what rubbed salt in the wounds was when McGinn was walking off. You could see he was really upset. Like, his eyes were glazed. I think he realised, oh my word, like, I've not only cost him today, but we've got no midfielders and I'm going to be out for the next month in huge games. Ezri Konsa called his name and he went, John, and he went like this to him. I just thought, you know, horse is already bolted. Like, he's already gone. Like, are you going to stop him smash up the change room now? That's just like, but yeah, I
think
feel sorry
it was that. You know what I think it was? I think John McGinn has, you know, been speaking in the press. He said about what an important game is. I've seen John McGinn on the pitch this season do that. I didn't really like that from Konsa. If I'm being honest, it felt very unnecessary to rub salt into the wound. It was almost like, well, you've been saying this, and now you've gone and done that. I didn't really like that. Unfortunately, it's been picked up on the cameras as well. I did think that was really unnecessary from Konsa.
Yeah, I just think tempers are obviously overspilling at that point, and you know, McGinn's just fuming already. And I think Konsa's obviously just realizes that the game's gone in a way. It was a very quiet, subdued dressing room afterwards. Obviously, McGinn and all the players disappeared fairly early, and those reporters that are in the mix zone afterwards, they were unsuccessful in speaking to any Villa player. So I think it was a defeat that will hurt more than any other this season. But listen, they've got you know, Ajax on Thursday, and it's a mammoth game and one that I'm sure McGinn's looking forward to.
I mean, Konsa got sent off in the week, didn't they? As well, we feel like we never really get anyone sent off. You know, we've had two players sent off in the space of a few days. You know, maybe John McGinn made that gesture to Konsa for the mistake for the second goal, perhaps, and he's retaliating to that. But I didn't really like that. Not knocking Konsa, because he's been phenomenal this season. He's been phenomenal since Emery came in. He's been a wonderful defender, but I didn't like that. Just that's just my opinion. It almost feels like there's no point in dissecting the rest of the game because, you know, the game's gone at that point. We're never going to get back into it, but it is compounded by Spurs scoring two very late goals. And the problem that we've got there is that's really pushed the goal difference in their favour as well. So it's almost like they've made up an extra point on us as well, which is frustrating.
Yeah, it wasn't. It just felt like at that time, with obviously Tim Robinson coming on, I just thought maybe you just sit, you know, it might be pretty bleak, but you just sit and wait for the rest of the game to peter out. The fact that they 10 minutes of added time is put on in firstly that no one wanted, and then, you know, Timo Werner capping it off, you just think, not ideal, is it? And you know, I really, the only thing that I would have liked to see is John Duran come on for that final 15 minutes, because I think he would have
that would have been another red card.
Do you know what? I don't think as many supporters would have emptied the stadium as quickly as they did if John Duran come on, because that's just, you know what, we forget about the scoreline, the game's gone, but John Duran's coming on. This could be a show in itself. Him against Romero would be fantastic. It's just, Rob Salt in the wounds, didn't it, those extra two goals.
Yeah, you're right. There's a big game on Thursday. Maybe it's good to have a game where, you know, something kind of on the line now, because it was 0-0 in the first leg. You know, I had visions of Villa winning comfortably in that first leg, and then the second game being a bit of a non-event. You know, 0-0. That game is set up now for it all to play for. McGinn, of course, can play in that game, but now he'll be missing for West Ham away.
Yeah.
Wolves at home, who we always struggle against, and then of course Manchester City away as well. And at the moment, when we're low on personnel, that, you know, you can't dress that up. Other than that's compounded the day, really, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's a mammoth miss, isn't it? You just think Wolves at home. You saw what it was, how important he was at Molineux in terms of getting around the pitch, being nice and aggressive, leading. Now you need your other players to lead. You know, obviously Martinez is in goal, but you need those players on the pitch. You need to start looking at Douglas Luiz. You're thinking, you're so good. Emery loves you. Emery's always wanting more from you. You're another leader, you know, in that midfield. You've now got to go out and really conduct that game. You're going to be sat next to a 20-year-old kid.
Do you think he will be?
Yeah.
Do you not think Tillemans will move back there?
No, because what's interesting yesterday is that Emery said, Tillemans and Louise can play together, but they're too similar. And his description was, we need a stopper like Booper. And the only stopper that we have like Booper is Tim. So in terms of midfield balance, he'll have to play Tim. You know, if it was Dendonka still here, I think he would play.
Yeah.
Tillemans and Louise, in certain games, maybe. But I think it's very difficult to actually have any type of midfield anchor if those two play together. And that's why Emery's played Tillemans in that number 10 role, because he doesn't trust him to track, you know, defensively runners. And he's not probably athletic enough to make those interceptions and be that, you know, midfield number six.
Yeah, I mean, we are lacking options in the middle of the park, because Tillemans was signed really to be that bridge between Louise and Kamara, could probably cover both of them. But it turns out, actually, he can't really play in the midfield too, and he has played most of his game as the support striker, as the support striker, as that number 10. It's going to be interesting how the next few weeks unfold. I was speaking to Tails last night, and, you know, as I said, this game, it might end up being costly at the end of the season, but it doesn't define the team. It doesn't define the season. There is going to be, Tottenham will lose games. We will lose games. We will win in weeks when Tottenham don't win, and vice versa. We're still in a strong position. We're still fourth in the table. Spurs have got that game in hand where they can overtake us now, but that game is away at Chelsea, who they have an abhorrent record against at Stamford Bridge. I'm not, is it 30 years or something they haven't won at Stamford Bridge? So, you know, fingers crossed Chelsea can keep that going, though I wouldn't rely on the modern-day Chelsea, in fairness. But there is still going to be twists and turns. Yeah. Maybe does that bring Manchester United back into the discussion for Champions League? I don't know. Probably not, but it's probably something to have a little look over your shoulder about. But also, fifth can still get Champions League football. Yeah. We don't know at the moment. So all is not lost. Yes, be upset about that game for sure. I'm upset. Obviously, we've just spoke about things that went wrong and things that were wrong before the game even kicked off. But there's no reason to be getting on players' backs and things like that, because there's still a long way to go. Is it 10 games left? In the Premier League, there's plenty of stuff still going to happen.
Exactly. And, you know, I really can't see Villa finishing as low as sixth now. I think Man United will need a real consistent run of form, and they haven't got that. They simply haven't got in the locker. They might win three, but then they'll lose to...
Their game was awful on Saturday.
Exactly. They'll lose to that type of team. You know, I think it's pretty... There's enough evidence to suggest that. They won't finish higher than sixth. Villa will be fifth at worst, and that's my prediction. It might be bold, but... I don't think it will be.
Greg's been saying for the last few weeks, Villa will get fourth. No worries. No worries.
Well, I'm not going to be quite as confident as Greg, but I think fourth or fifth is where Villa will finish. But yeah, as you said, there'll be so many more twists and turns. Villa will eke out games where they probably don't deserve to win, and then they might lose a few where they do. There's obviously some big games coming up, and yeah, they're built for this part of the season. Emery will want something from this season, and this is the defining part. And whether these players need to make sure that they're ready, and I'm sure they will be. You know, starting with Ajax on Thursday, there'll be a bounce back. They've not lost back-to-back league games, like I said at the top of the show, and I think they'll do it again. You know, they'll go to West Ham next Sunday, and I think they'll put a performance in there and they'll win there. So this is a setback. This is a big blip. But the reaction is going to be key. And although McGinn's not going to be playing, I'm sure he's going to be really key in telling that to all the players.
Yeah, in and around the dressing room still, I'm sure. And I'm also sure that the players will be watching that game back a few times. And I'm sure Emery has probably already watched it back four or five times before he got up and had his morning coffee. So, yeah, you know, no stone is left unturned by the coaching staff and the manager. And, you know, there'll be a plan to put this right. And Jacob's right. They have put things like this right throughout the entirety of the season so far. We'll pick up a little bit. But first, let's hear a little bit more about NordVPN. 1874 is proudly sponsored by NordVPN, so when they and you can't watch it, we want to help you. NordVPN is a secure and private service which works on pretty much any device, including your laptop, mobile, and television. So if you want to watch some live content, it allows you to appear like you're in another country. And whilst you're connected, no one else can find out what you're doing, including your internet service provider. Beyond this, the service also has threat protection baked in to protect you from intrusive website ads and malware, which is pretty handy for you. As part of NordVPN support performance for free, this also includes Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. All you've got to do is go to 1874.io/NordVPN and sign up. All the details are also in the description.
As always, we're very grateful to anyone that signs up. We know that money is tight, but if you think NordVPN will help you out, it will also help keep the channel running and help us too.
Just obviously, we've touched on the Ajax game, Jacob, coming up on Thursday. Do you think it played a part in the result at all of the performance? The fact that Villa played on Thursday and Spurs had had a week of rest? I've seen a few people mention that on social media.
Yeah, Postecoglou said that he saw and sensed Villa retiring at the end of the first half. Emery, when that was asked to Emery afterwards, when he came in 35, 40 minutes later after his press conference, he denied it. He said, no way. We're not tired. It was just, we had played well in the first half. Just they scored two quick goals. But it's not ideal, is it? I know it's only Amsterdam, which is only an hour flight, but it's not ideal when you're getting back at 2 a.m. in the morning. That then affects your next day in terms of recovery, in terms of training. That then that affects how long you've got to work on the plan. Villa had one training session really to work on that shape, that 3-5-2 shape.
Yes, that's why it's even more bizarre to have chosen to change it.
And that day wouldn't have been intense. That would have been simply walk through, a lot of standing and stopping, a lot of just tactical information. And although the physical side of things is an issue, but also the mental side, because they've got the players, they're earning lots of money, first world problems, but they've got to learn a new game plan, a new way of playing. Leon Bailey's position is going to be changed. Ezri Konsa's playing in a different formation. He's just been sent off on Thursday. How is he going to emotionally react to getting back on the horse, playing, learning for the next day? There's a lot of emotion that go into it, a lot of big atmospheres. Amsterdam, Ajax Arena, massive, huge atmosphere. It was very aggressive, very hostile. All the focus was on that. Then they have to emotionally come down to learn, and then they've got to raise themselves again for another big game on Sunday. So it's not just the mental fatigue, it's not just the physical fatigue, it's the emotion that comes with it and how challenging it is to really keep going again, especially at this part of the season where you're not playing third round Carabao Cup games, you're playing really big games every time. You've got to raise yourself every single time, and I think that was the issue really.
Okay. Interesting. Let's wrap it up then, Jacob. I'm depressed enough. the rest of my life, I just want to get through this water bottle as well. So yeah, let's call it that. Thank you ever so much for coming on and talking to me. Always a pleasure to talk to you. And thanks to everyone for watching and listening as well. However you are digesting this pod, whether it be via audio or video on YouTube, if you could do all the things that help the channel, like subscribe, like, I don't know if we hit our likes target that I set on Friday, actually. We didn't get 700 likes. That'll be the reason we lost, because I did say that on the preview show on Friday when we did that. So yeah, comment as well if you agree with what we've said. Do you think it was a sending off? Are you more on Jacob's side or are you more on my side? Back for a preview of the Ajax game at some point this week as well. So watch out for that. And yeah, just try not to dwell on it would be my message. We're still fourth in the Premier League, still in European competition. There's still a lot to be excited about. So it's a damaging defeat. It's a bad defeat. But don't lose trust in these players and Unai Emery, because they're a sensational bunch and there's absolutely no need to do that at all. So yeah, thanks to Jacob again. Thanks to Adam, and have a good week and up the Villa.
Sports Social Podcast Network.